She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 202, Making a Change and Becoming an Innovator with Laura Roeder.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Hey guys, today's episode, I'm sitting down with Laura Roeder, who is the founder of Meet Edgar, and it's an online platform that shares and reshares social media postings for your business online. So you load your content into Meet Edgar, and then what happens is they will push out content for you on that specific campaign that you're pushing. But the beauty of it is that Meet Edgar will then go back and look at your content that had high engagement and automatically repost for you. So you're not having to continually go in and reschedule content on your own. It takes all the guesswork out of it. In this episode, we talk about her initial early days of launching Meet Edgar, how she grew the company, how to evolve and modernize your product and service, and figure out how to transition your business and your team, see how to balance being a new mom and an entrepreneur, also know how to distribute ownership to strong leaders within your team, and being able to run a remote business. So stay tuned with Laura Roeder. Hey, She Did It Her Way listeners, welcome back for another episode of the podcast. I'm super stoked to welcome Laura Roeder, who is the founder of Meet Edgar, which some of you may be familiar with, but maybe not. It is an awesome tool for you to use as someone who is working in the online space and you have social media, but I'm going to let Laura tell us in her own words what it is that she does, and then we'll talk about her journey and how she got started.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be here, Amanda. So my company, Meet Edgar, shares and reshares your social media updates automatically. So if you're promoting your business on Twitter or on Facebook, something that's been talked about a lot on Facebook is how low the reach has gotten. You know, maybe only 10% of the people that like your Facebook page are seeing your updates, sometimes even less. So with such a low percentage seeing any update, it really doesn't make any sense to spend all this time writing a blog post, all this time writing social media updates about your blog post, send them out once to 10% of people, and then never send them out again, right? It's a lot of work for not a lot of reward. So with Edgar, you create a library of all those social media updates with all your evergreen content that you want to keep showing people, and then Edgar shares and reshares the updates for you automatically, so you don't have to spend your time resharing all that social media content. You just create the original content once and then Edgar takes care of the rest.
I love it. Sounds like a ton of automation, which is amazing. Let's go back to you guys. You first launched and started Meet Edgar back in 2014. Take us back to what you were doing prior to that, and then we'll get into the transition in the early stages of Meet Edgar, because I believe a lot of the listeners listening are either thinking about starting a business or maybe they've recently gone out on their own. And so I would love to get your perspective on that phase of your journey.
Yeah. So yeah, Edgar wasn't my first business. So when I launched Edgar in 2014, I was already running a social media training business, LKR Social Media, where I was teaching entrepreneurs how to do social media marketing effectively. And actually, the software, Edgar, came directly from what I was teaching people to do manually. So what I just talked about of don't just share your updates once, and I was teaching people how to think about the different categories that they created on social media, like your promotional stuff, your blog posts, other people's content, everything that Edgar does for you, I was teaching people to do with a spreadsheet at the time before you had Edgar. So that was my business when I launched Edgar.
How did you, what was like the light bulb moment for you to say, maybe I can make this some sort of software that would allow me to automate this process? And then what were some of the first steps that you took?
Yeah, well, it seemed really weird to me that I was having to keep my social media updates outside of my social media tool, because I was paying for a social media tool. And so I would have to keep everything in a spreadsheet, copy and paste them into a tool. If I had an image, too bad, you can't really keep images in spreadsheets. So it seemed odd to me, like, okay, WordPress stores all of my blog posts, right? I don't just write it in WordPress when it sends it out and disappears, yet this is what social media tools are doing. So it seemed really weird to me that the tools didn't do it already. And honestly, it seemed so weird that I thought, well, that must be impossible to do what I'm thinking of, because I'm not a software developer. So I thought, like, that, you know, I'm not the only one who's had this idea. It must just be too hard to do. Maybe there's some technical reason why you couldn't do it. So basically, one day I was complaining to my husband, Chris, I don't know why the tools don't do this. I guess it must be really hard. And Chris is a software developer. So of course, Chris
nice.
Said, yeah, he said, well, no, like you, he said, tools could do that. There's no reason they can't do that. He said, I could build a tool that does that. So I said, great.
Okay. Then what was it like then? So did you still run LKR in parallel of Edgar, or was there any sort of transition where then you stopped doing any sort of client servicing work for LKR and then just ran with Edgar 100%?
Yeah, so it was definitely messy in the beginning. So
yes, tell us everything. Tell us what real life is like as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so when we had the idea for Edgar and we decided, okay, we're serious about building this and launching this as a business. What I was thinking in my head at the time, I thought, okay, well, the software and the training will complement each other really well, right? Because the people who take the training are then going to want to buy the software. If they don't want to buy the software, maybe they'll want to buy the training instead. I thought we'll do both. And my training business was a seven-figure business at the time. I mean, it wasn't a tiny business. It was making me a lot of money. So I obviously wasn't planning on shutting it down. So in July 2014, we launched Edgar. I was pregnant at the time, by the way, Edgar launched.
So it's like you're like birthing two childs into the world. Two children, not childs, but yes.
So we launched Edgar. Basically, it started doing really well right from the beginning. Like when we first put it out, you know, the very first month there was like 17 customers, but then there was 50, and then there was 100, and then there was 200, and then there was 500. Just like it started taking off right away, and it kind of exceeded our expectations of how quickly it would grow. So we ended up hitting seven figures of revenue, of, you know, making $1 million a year business from Edgar alone 11 months after launch.
Nice.
Which was also while I was on maternity leave, by the way. I took a 3-month maternity leave, and that's when it crossed over that $1 million figure, which was a pretty cool moment, you know, to have happen while I was on leave. So after it had been able to be that successful after only a year, I was like, I just want to do software. You know, the training business, like I said, had been successful, had been lucrative, but I was the face of it. It was your typical training business where I'm the trainer, I'm the teacher. You know, all the ads feature me as sort of the trustworthy person, the thought leader teaching you about social media. So while I enjoy that stuff and I enjoy teaching and I enjoy speaking, especially after I became a mom, I didn't really love having a business that was so dependent on me, where I felt like I always had to do another promotion or create another course if I wanted to make money. Where the software business, I'm not a developer, right? So I couldn't fix it if it broke. I couldn't be the one pushing the product forward. That by definition was a team of other people. So I just basically loved the software model so much that about a year after launch, we decided to shut down LKR social media and totally focus on Edgar. And so up until that time, the teams had kind of been mixed together. We didn't launch it as a separate business. All the money was intermingled. You know, the people's jobs were intermingled. We had just been kind of building.
Oh, wow. So then, so it sounds like you're saying you took some of your team members from LKR and then transitioned them into employees at Edgar. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so we didn't have very many employees at the time. So LKR was always a smaller business than Edgar. So Edgar now is, about 30 people and LKR was like 4 people. So it wasn't like a huge team to transition, but yeah, the people that were there started working on Edgar, and then we were also hiring a new team, especially for the software development team. That's not something, of course, that we had at the old business. So it was all a mix.
Yeah. Talk to us then. So that's amazing that you guys hit the 7-figure mark under a year. Like, congratulations.
Thank you.
When you guys were when things were just growing so fast, did you have any sort of hurdles or challenges because of the quick growth, or were there things that you did ahead of time that hedged against the, like, any sort of challenges that you might encounter? So, like, did you automate processes, or what do you think made you successful to scale with how fast your company grew?
Well, I have to say, knowing that I was going on maternity leave within the first year of the business was just an incredible blessing in disguise, because I was really thinking about the business in a really scalable way right from launch, which I had never done with any of my businesses before. You know, I think a lot of us as entrepreneurs have this dream of a business that runs without us, and it often remains a dream, a fantasy, you know, that we might achieve someday. But in this case, I had talked to a lot of mom entrepreneurs getting advice about how to do both, and they all told me, you know, make sure you set aside more time than you think you need. You can always come back early if you want to come back to work sooner. But if you've told your team that you're going to be back in 2 weeks and then you need 3 months, like, that's not a great plan. And you know, you just never know if you might have health complications or your baby might, or, you know, you just don't really know what's going to happen. So because of that advice that, you know, so many mom entrepreneurs have been generous enough to give me, I'm like, I'm going to take a 3 month maternity leave where I'm completely off for 3 months, like, not half working, just not worried about work at all. Mm. And because I knew that was my game plan right from launch, it was like, okay, this business needs to be able to not just, like, function without me, but really grow without me and really thrive without me. So I think I made very different decisions right from the beginning with giving people ownership over other areas of the business. Like Christina, who's our head of customer service, at the time, I guess she was probably still, like, a part-time employee just doing customer service for the business, but customer service was hers. You know, she didn't need to run anything past me. She didn't need to ask me if somebody could get a refund. Like, it was just entirely her decisions to make. So then once I was gone, it didn't become a bottleneck of what would Laura do. It's just, okay, Christina can decide what to do. So I think having the ownership distributed beyond just me definitely helped us grow quickly, because I wasn't constantly bottlenecking things.
Mm-hmm. What sort of processes in the beginning? I mean, I love how you said, you know, this business needs to grow and thrive without me there, and putting it into that mindset so that we're actually implementing systems at scale right from the get-go versus just doing something for the sake of doing it and then having to rework it and figure it out. What were some other things that, when it comes to, like, communication or tools that you might have used to set to really put in processes to the business?
Yeah, I mean, another big one in our company is meeting rhythms. So we are a remote team. Everyone's in North America, but we all work from home. And even though we work remotely, we operate very much like an in-person company. We're just at our own home offices, you know, working on Slack instead of sitting next to each other working on Slack. So we do things like company-wide video meeting every Monday. Each team has their own Monday planning meeting and Friday, what we call Friday retro meeting, where you kind of wrap up what happened over the week. And so those would happen even when the departments were very small. Like, if there's just two customer service people, they're going to meet on Monday and Friday and talk about what's going on that week. So I think having those regular check-ins, keeping the teams in line and also keeping the whole company in line are so important, because especially when you're remote, it's so easy to have, you know, one hand, left hand doing something, right hand doing something else, and you're just kind of working independently on your computer. You miss those opportunities to overhear conversations or overhear phone calls and be like, wait, what are you talking about? I just told her something totally different, you know?
Yeah.
It's not as easy to have those moments when you're remote. So just sticking to those schedules and taking them really seriously, not like, oh, we'll meet if we have something to talk about. Just like, we put aside this time every Monday, we're going to meet, someone's going to have some sort of update about something. It's a little thing, but I think it's been really crucial for us.
Right. How do you structure your Monday meetings, or is there a template, and how do you make sure that they don't go over, like, let's say you set aside 30 minutes or an hour. How do you make sure they don't go over those times and hijack a Monday?
Yeah, so we are very conscious of the time. So the format that we use for our Monday meetings, which we're always experimenting with, is just an update from each department head about what's kind of coming in the week ahead and why. So something that we've been trying to improve lately is we found the meetings got sort of boring with a bunch of detailed status updates from each department. And sometimes it was hard not having context for what was going on. So we're trying to shift now into, you know, for example, our dev team, less just like a bulleted list of what they're building and more, okay, we're prioritizing updating this feature this week. And here's why we feel that this is the most important feature to work on this week. So everyone has the context of why people are doing the work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. What about, I know when I was looking at some of your guys' strategy in the beginning, I know that like email list building was really big. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us just about what you know when it comes to email list building, why it's important, how can people get started? What are some of like anything that you want to share on that?
Yeah, so I think list building is hugely important. It's actually something that a lot of software companies don't do. When you look at like the tools you use, a lot of them don't have any kind of email capture on their main site, maybe on their blog. It's just like something small on the sidebar. What's so powerful about email is that it's a way for you to show up for people where they are. So if someone comes and visits your blog, like they have to come seek you out, right? If they visit your website, they have to come seek you out. They're in their inbox every day, 100 times a day, you know, on their phone, constantly, whatever it is. And I like to think about the reach of email. So, you know, I talked about the reach of Facebook, right? How the reach of Facebook is only 10% of the people that like you. Mm. Well, in email, we tend to look at open rates, which one, I mean, just the open rate, you know, depending on how much you clean your list is going to be maybe like 10% on the low end to like 70% on the high end if you have like a really, you know, small list that you clean out really regularly. So those are people that have opened it, you know, which is awesome. And then even beyond that, there's the visibility of email, which I don't think gets talked about very much. So there's also a lot of emails that we don't open, but we see that name pop up in our inbox every week. Right? Even if you always archive it, like it's just that little brand reminder of like, oh, I meant to check out Meet Edgar. And our target is busy entrepreneurs, right? Sometimes it takes people months or longer between when they first hear of us and when they finally set aside that hour to set us up or make that decision if they want to buy or whatever. So email is just a really, really effective way to stay in front of people. I like to think with marketing, you have to make it so easy for your prospects to remember you and to find you. And people often make the mistake of being too worried about bothering people. You know, they're like, I don't want to email them all the time. Or like, I don't want to post too much on Facebook. But
it's like half the time no one's even seeing
it. No one's seeing it. And it's hard to remember because you see all your emails. You know what I mean? Like, you see every email that you write. You see every Facebook update that you write. So we often make mistakes like, oh, you know, I wrote this series of 7 emails. Like clearly they're reading them all. And clearly they're reading them all in the order that I sent them out. And then it's like, no.
That is
not the case at all. And if you're not communicating in a pace that to you feels like a whole lot, then to your prospect, they're like, what happened to them? I haven't heard from them. I mean, I always like to sign up for the email list of any retail store, any like mall type of store, like sign up for their email list. They often email you, if not every single day, sometimes even multiple times a day.
Yes, that is. I just went to this website where I think it was like Unroll Me or something. And it like calculates like how many things you're signed up for and all this stuff. And I'm like, I had no idea I was on that many lists. Like, that is insane. But then you really do look at, like, when you said before the visibility piece of it, I see emails that come into my inbox. Well, I don't necessarily always read them. I see them, and it is like a brand recognition from that standpoint.
And you're looking for what you want. You know, I'm on the Bloomingdale's email list. Every so often they have a great sale, and then I open that one. That's kind of what I'm waiting for on their list. 90% of them I never open, but it's an easy way for me to keep up with what I want to know, which is when they're having a sale, and for them to constantly keep their brand front of mind for me.
Mm-hmm. What are some, like, do you have any statistics on how often or like what's working for Edgar and like any sort of resources to find list building techniques?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, the most important thing as far as growing your email list is to make it really prominent on your homepage. So like call to action on the front page of your site, in my opinion, should be some sort of list capture mechanism, you know, whatever that is for your business. If that's some sort of freebie that they download, if that's them requesting like a free call or a free info session or attending a webinar. You know, retail stores will do like, here's a 10, 15% discount, whatever it is that you're capturing email on your homepage and then throughout the site. And then it's just that practice of like, why don't you try to make it a little better every month? So if every month you run another split test, whether it's just how you word your offer or with a different offer, you know, if you ran one every single month at the end of the year, well, now we have like 12 improvements from where we started, right? And so now maybe we've taken our opt-in rate from 10% to 12% or whatever it is. Like, that's one of those bottom line things that just improves the profitability, the number of customers you have in your business every single day that you just continually increase over time.
Mm-hmm. I know list building is something that we're focusing on for She Did It Her Way and really figuring out like how to serve the audience, what content, being able to pull the audience and really get into a rhythm with email list building as well, knowing how important it is. So we're just going to take a quick 60-second break, you guys. Want to give a shout out to our partner and sponsor for this podcast episode, which is Lola. You guys have heard me talk about them, and actually the founders came on the podcast as well. They are 100% organic feminine care products, and the one thing is that the FDA doesn't actually require brands to disclose a comprehensive list of ingredients in their feminine care products, so most of them don't. And like I said, Lola products are 100% organic, and they make your month a little bit easier because the subscription is fully customizable to your choice and mix of products and your perfect mix based on your needs and the number of boxes and the frequency of the delivery. So for if it's your first order, you can receive 60% off by heading to mylola.com and then entering in Her Way promo code at checkout to get 60% off your first order. Awesome. Okay. So Laura, the follow-up question that I have to is I was seeing that like you didn't go for any sort of venture capital or outside investment. And when I read your reasoning, it completely made sense. And I would love for you to elaborate and share that reasoning with us as to why you said no to any sort of outside funding.
Yeah. So it's something I really researched because when I started this business, I had those connections. It was a software business. I knew I probably would be able to raise money if I went down that path, which is an exciting thing, right? Like, oh, people are going to give me hundreds of thousands or
like yes.
Cool. You know, sounds great. So I just started by talking to all my friends who have raised money. Like, what did you love about it? What did you hate about it? Tell me everything I need to know. And literally 100% of them said, I wouldn't do it if I didn't have to. You know, if you're in a position where you can get this business started without having to do that, that's a great position to be in. You can always raise money later. And for me, looking at why I ran the business and what I wanted to get out of it, you know, a huge reason that I work for myself is to have that freedom and flexibility. You know, my husband and I love to travel. We live in the US and he's from the UK, so we go back and forth a lot, and then we just take other family vacations. I want to have the freedom to say, you know what, I'm going to take a month traveling and like, I'm not going to be as present in the business for that month. Or like, I'm going to take 3 months maternity leave. Maybe I'll want it to turn into 6 months. I don't know. Maybe things will be a little slower during that 6 months. Like that's okay with me. You know, we work for ourselves in order to not have a boss. And when you have investors, you do have a boss. I mean, one, of course, you can, if it gets to a bigger level, like you can literally be removed from your own company. But I wasn't so much worried about that. It was more just like, am I going to be in total control of how I run this business, of the pace and the lifestyle freedom that it gives me? And when you raise money, you are expected to provide enormous returns. You know, that's the only way that it makes sense for the investor is if you are able to sell your business for, I mean, minimum $50 million really usually needs to be more like $100 million type of range. And if you're building a $100 million business, like that's not a 30-person business. You know, that's a 100-plus person business. That's a business with a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. One friend who is growing a startup really fast, and they've raised a lot of money. The way he put it to me was, every week has to be the best week we've ever had. Mm-hmm. Every single week. You know, that is the expectation from their investors. That's the expectation from their community. And it is really stressful.
Yeah.
Every week be the best week you've ever had.
I mean, I would have to imagine, if there's some people thrive under immense amount of pressure. I thrive under an even keel amount of pressure that I put on myself. But like, I would have, that would be super intense environment to work under.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It came up because he was complaining they had opened offices in, I think it was Salt Lake City. And he's like, we hired this person to run the office, and then she just wants to go skiing every weekend. And I was like, oh, she wants to ski every weekend? He's like, yeah, we didn't hire her to ski.
We hired her to do the office. Come on. We
hired her to run things. Because, you know, that's the common like startup environment is, yeah, we expect you to work 24/7 to get to these goals of this enormous growth.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the challenges of when you're an entrepreneur and facing like this self-doubt, or facing maybe, okay, I feel like I'm not doing enough, or like, wow, is my business really moving forward? Like all these thoughts that come in, like talk to us about your experience. How did you move past them? And then what has it been like over the long period of time that you've been an entrepreneur?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a good question. Such a big question. I mean, I try to remind myself of the reality of the situation. So there's this idea that whenever you are upset about something, you know, you have another imagined reality in your head, and then you're upset that whatever you're experiencing does not match that idea that you created in your head. And it's sort of funny, right? When I think of it that way, I'm like, that's absurd. Like, I'm upset because I'm like wishing that my physical reality was in a different state. So I just find that helpful to remember. Yeah, if I'm like, we're not growing fast enough, or like, we're not making enough money, it's like, I mean, I can think that, but like, I'm upset about something that literally is not real. And it's so easy to benchmark yourself against these crazy standards. I mean, one, we only see the success stories. Two, like, those are the ones we filter ourselves against, right? We're not comparing ourselves all day to people who have made like $50,000 a year for 10 years and are super happy with it. You know, yeah. We're comparing ourselves against like Uber. Like, why am I not growing as fast as they are? So, yeah, I mean, I think you just have to keep grounded. You have to remind yourself that why you're doing this and what you're really after. So for me, I want to enjoy my work. Like I said, I want to have that freedom and flexibility with my time. I want to be able to make an income that can support, you know, as many flights to the UK as I like, and to not have to worry about buying the organic groceries. And I have all that, you know, and it's fun to strive for bigger goals in the business, but as soon as it becomes not fun, I think you really have to step back and be like, why, why am I creating something for myself that I don't enjoy?
Yeah. I mean, is there a period when you were starting any business, whether it was Edgar or LKR, like you had the grind period that you're like, okay, just keep going, keep going, keep going. And was there a certain time that you felt like took you out of that? Or was it was it something that you did in your business that then catapulted you to like move past it? Or is it just part of natural progression of entrepreneurship for you?
Yeah. So I have like never done the grind hours wise, like literally never. Like, so I've been working for myself for about 10 years now, like have not had periods where I've worked over the weekends, like have never like stayed up all night doing something. It's not how I operate. Like, maybe it's just because I'm lazy. I don't know. Like, I just get done after a certain point. I have not done that. So I do always bring that up because some people say, oh, in the first years of a business, that's right. How it has to be. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something you'll hear a lot. They're like, oh, okay, you can do that later. But for the first 3 years, you know, it's going to be nights and weekends all the time. And the thing is, like, it's just always a choice. So if you have 80 hours of work to do in a week, you can do the 80 hours. You can do it over 2 weeks instead of 1 week, you know, and make it 40 hours each. You can add someone else to your team and you can do 40 and they can do 40. Like, there is no scenario in which one human alone absolutely has to do 80 hours, right? That's always a choice that you make. So I've kind of viewed it that way. Like, I'll just get done whatever I get done during this time. Adding other people is a great way to add more to your workload that you can do, which I think a lot of people wait too long to hire or to bring in help. Like, they just try to do more and more themselves, and you're not going to get more hours. But if you bring other people on your team, guess what? Like, those people get 8 hours in their workday too. So you can get double the amount done if you have two people than if you have one person.
Yeah. And I love how, I mean, there is such a stigma of, like, you have to grind it out and you have to, like, crush it and push yourself. And I'm not, like, I'll spend, like, Saturday mornings doing some work, but mainly it's because I'm in a just completely different headspace than I am during the week. But I love that you are showing that, you know, if you can be intentional with the time that you do have, it can actually be more productive than thinking that you need to work crazy insane hours, especially, like, painting that picture or believing that that's the only way to get to a successful business.
Yeah. And I've definitely had times where I feel like I'm hustling more just in the sense of like my days being maxed out. Like, actually right now I just took back over marketing for my business. So, right now I'm head of marketing and CEO. So, like, I'm busy right now, you know, I'm a lot busier than I have been before, but I'm not working more hours. I'm still, you know, spending time with my family. I'm still keeping up with, like, my Pilates, my exercise. So it, like, I feel more maxed out during my days, but I'm still limiting my schedule to what I want.
Mm-hmm. Just being, like, figuring out what you want. And then also, like, saying if you're only going to work 40 hours, then that just really forces you to, like what you said before, maybe find someone else that you can give hours to. Mm-hmm. So a couple last questions before we wrap up. One of them is, what is the one piece of advice you'd give to someone who is starting a business or within their first year of business?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is to find what people will pay you money for. And the only way to know that is to have them actually pay you money. You know, so people getting on an email list doesn't mean they'll pay you money. People saying they would love to buy it and they'll totally buy it once it comes out, that's not giving you money. Giving you money is giving you money. And it's so easy to kind of mess around with ideas for ages and, you know, build whatever it is you're creating or think, oh, I'm testing different things out. But just the information that you get after actually selling something to someone, both in the selling process and in delivering whatever it is that you're selling, you learn so much more in that hour than you did in the 3 months of, like, tooling around and creating your offer and researching and whatever you're doing. So the sooner you can get to that point of that first sale, the better. And then once you're there, just continually experimenting with, like, you know, they call it product market fit. What will people pay for? What are people actively looking for? What's an easy yes for people? It can be really hard not to focus on what you want to sell, you know? And I think often what you want to sell or what you think people need is not what they want. So my very first business was mostly making websites for local businesses in Chicago where I lived. And so that was in, I guess, like 2007. And so at that time, there were still plenty of businesses that didn't have websites at all. And so I thought, oh, like, easy money. I'm going to sell websites to all these restaurants and local businesses that don't have a website, because obviously they need one. This is going to be great. Turns out they didn't have a website for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, if they hadn't built a website, they didn't think they needed a website. And I was so frustrated by that, because I'm like, these people clearly need a website. Why would they buy a website from me? And it's like, that's what I think. That's not what they think. And it does not matter what I think. It only matters what they think. So, you know, shifting to that mindset of, like, even if you think you know better, even if you think that's not really what's best for them, like, genuinely seeing from your customer's perspective is just so valuable.
And giving them, like, what they want and just going with it. No, that's a good, that's great insight. What is one of your favorite books that you've read? And it can be business, it can be casual or non-business too. It's some book that's made an impact.
So one of my favorites is Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. It used to be called The Rockefeller Habits. It's a business book, and it's a very, very concrete, very how-to business book. I mean, I remember when I first discovered it, I'm like, finally, someone just wrote a book that just tells you how to run a business. It has worksheets I can fill out. It has checklists I can check off. This is amazing. So that has definitely been a really essential book for how I've learned how to operate a business.
I will have to dig into that. Okay, last question is, what is the one thing that you do on a daily basis that yields the biggest ROI for you?
I think being deliberate with my time, thinking about what I'm going to do before I do it. And, you know, sometimes I'm more consistent with this practice than others. There's the book, The One Thing, that talks about what's the one thing that would make everything else easy or unnecessary. So now that I'm in this marketing manager role, I notice that my most important work is often planning projects, because before the project is planned, no one else can do their part, right? Before I have that list of, like, here's all the moving parts that we need, doing that project plan, then designer can't design, copywriter can't write. But when I just put aside an hour to create that plan, then it's go, right? Then everyone else can start running and doing their part. So I think that's kind of an easy example to understand. There's other ways that that plays out, I think, a little more esoterically, but thinking about how can I spend my time so that I'm either creating the plan, that I'm putting the resources in place, you know, that I'm setting things up so that they can flow. And maybe that's your own time, right? If you're a solopreneur, maybe it's spending that hour doing the project plan just for yourself. So you're not, like, trying to remember what you were supposed to do or who you're supposed to talk to, right? That you can just keep going back to your list, and so that your execution time can be really, really effective.
Mm-hmm. Deliberate. Okay, one last question. I apologize. if you could give your life a movie title, what would it be? And it could be a made-up one.
I love that Bon Jovi song, It's My Life. Very inspirational. So I'll go with It's My Life.
I'm totally gonna turn that on when I go back into, like, work mode after this interview, and I'm just gonna jam out to It's My Life. I'm not gonna sing it because I don't want to scar any listeners for that reason. But Laura, share with our listeners where they can find more information out about you and connect or get more information on Edgar.
Yeah, so you can find Edgar at meetedgar.com or meet Edgar on Twitter or Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at LKR, and I also blog at my name at lauraroder.com.
Awesome. Laura, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, and I'm so excited that we got to sit down and chat with you.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda.
Have a wonderful day.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.